Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Now, many ancient cultures have used animal bones as a way of predicting the future or communicating with the dead. But the ancient Shang dynasty in China, they used them to help make important decisions of state. Professor Joachim Gentz from the University of Edinburgh joins us now on News Talk. Afternoon, Joachim.
Good afternoon.
Could you start by telling us something about the Shang dynasty? When did it exist?
All right. The Shang dynasty is probably the first historical dynasty of China. And it started probably around 1600 BCE and ended in 1050 BCE. So it ran for 550 years, quite a long time.
Right. And did they control much of China?
Oh, they controlled the heartland of China, what we call the Yellow River Basin, right? So this is where all the ancient dynasties settled. It's, at the Yellow River, a little bit north of the Yellow River.
Mm. And do we know much about their beliefs?
We know pretty much because we have documents which focus indeed on their religious belief. These documents are the earliest written documents which we have from China and, probably the earliest documents east of the Indus River. So they were written between 1250 and 1050, right? So they stretch over around 200 years. And they are oracle bone inscriptions. So they report divinations, prognostications of the future, which are directed to the ancestors of the Shang.
So as far as they were concerned, were there dead ancestors still living beings among them with a say in what decisions should be made?
Absolutely. And they were very powerful. They were amongst them. We know that they dwelled above, so somewhere, but they could be called down to through sacrifices. And people would communicate with them through these divination practices, namely these bones. Mm. So the bones, in a way, would be the medium, a phone today.
Yes.
You would call the ancestors with certain techniques.
Was it precise? Was it prescriptive about what bones should be used in these practices?
Yes, they mainly used shoulder blades of cows, of cattle, and bottom shells of turtles. These were the two main mediums. We also find shoulder blades of pigs and of deers and of sheep and so on. But mainly they would use these scapulae of bovids and these turtle plastrons.
And so describe that process then, because it involved putting symbols on them and using fire and the like.
Indeed, yes. So the process would be, first of all, you would collect these materials from workshops or through trade. Many of the turtle plastrons came from southern China. We know that. And they were traded and bought. We also know that they had huge farms in which they were breeding turtles because they used so many of them. So first of all, they would, of course, butcher the animals. They would then clean the bones. They would saw off the spine and the ankles. They would then polish them, make them as flat as possible. Then they would drill and carve little hollows on the backside of these bones or shells. And in the next step, the diviner would then apply heat to these hollows, mainly probably through, metal bronze rods, which were heated in the fire. Then they would apply this heat to these little hollows or these little pits on the backside of the bones and would provoke a crack through this heat. Mm. And this crack would have a particular form, like the letter T, but just lying on the side. So you would have a baseline and a sideline. And once these cracks were produced, and they probably also produced a certain sound, then the king would divine and interpret the outcome of this interaction with the ancestors, because this crack was a kind of response from the ancestors. And then this would be interpreted, in regard to the question which had been posed beforehand. So first you have a question, then you apply the heat, crack the bone, you receive the answer, and then you interpret the answer, because of course you just have an abstract sign here in form of a crack. And then afterwards, people would inscribe the whole procedure on the bone. And this is why we know of the questions, we know of the names of the diviners, we know of the time when they did it. So normally such an inscription consists of four parts. You have a kind of preface in which you have the date and the name of the diviner, sometimes even the place. Then you have the charge or the question, which defines the subject of the divination. And the third part then is the prognostication of the king, how he interpreted the response, the crack response by the ancestors. And sometimes we also have a verification.
And what, in terms of the interpretation of the crack, was there a criteria for that, or was it just entirely up to the king? Might it have been the king getting the answer that he was looking for anyway?
That is a very good question indeed, because we don't know. There is no report, no early report, which reflects on this interpretation procedure. We don't even know whether it was the form of the crack or whether it was perhaps the sound which was produced, because there is no correlation between the responses and the forms of the cracks. People have, of course, tried to see that, whether the sidelines going up or down or is leveled, and therefore the answer is yes or no. But no correlations have been found. We, however, do not assume that it was totally up to the king, so there must have been some control. Otherwise, this whole institution, which required so many resources, would have been meaningless.
Yeah. The kinds of questions that were asked, were they very significant questions?
Very significant indeed. These were questions which were relating to all major decisions which were made in the state. So these were decisions on whether or not they should go to war, whether they should go to war, whether they should conduct sacrifices, if they would conduct sacrifices, how these sacrifices would be, how many victims they should slaughter and offer to whom, and if there would be any kind of negative malign influence, like a sickness or raiding bandits, strange events or weather, harvest, whatever. They would ask the ancestors whose curse that was. So they first had to identify the cause through divination, very important. And then they had to identify the ancestor or the force, the natural force, which was responsible for this malign influence. And then they had to ask how much they would have to sacrifice, like, I don't know, for example, 3 oxen, 5 sheep and 3 human beings or something like that.
Okay.
So they would, yeah. And this was related to questions, yeah, relating indeed to military operations, sacrifice, agriculture, sickness, childbirth, dreams, whatever was troubling them.
Yeah, and the answers they would receive, were these answers always from ancestors? Did they know who was answer, or could it be from some deity as well?
It could be also from some deity. I think the major address would indeed be their own ancestors, with the highest ancestor being Shangdi, the highest ancestor, the ancestor on high, who is sometimes identified with the highest god, and perhaps even a group of highest ancestors, we don't know. But there was a clear hierarchy, and certain ancestors had certain times when they should be addressed or not. So there was a kind of ritual cycle by which they were addressed. And so different people were addressed, different forces were addressed and responded.
Mm. The human sacrifice aspect of that, is it known who those poor unfortunate people were? Were they locals to the area, or were they slaves, or what were they?
Depends. Well, there were human victims. For example, when a king was entombed, then these were probably his household slaves, which were going into the tomb. And there is one very famous tomb which has not been robbed, and 16 skeletons were found there. These were probably not captives, but servants. But then mostly in the divinations to the ancestors, captives were used, mainly of the Qiang minority or the Qiang people, against whom they fought many battles. And they would take them captive and then sacrifice humans, up to indeed hundreds of humans for one sacrifice.
My word. The divination practices, how long did they survive for?
The Shang abdicated to the Zhou in 1050 BCE, and then the divination went down considerably. And of all the fragments which we have found so far, which are 130,000, half of them are from the period of one king, of the very first king with whom the whole inscriptions into the bones were established, called Wu Ding. And he was really obsessed with this divination, and he probably was also the one who ordered them to be inscribed. And then later the Zhou dynasty took it over. They did not do it in the same sophisticated and regular way as the Shang, because they developed their own divination methods, which did not require so many resources. And we're not so much directed to the ancestors, but more to heaven and cosmic forces. And however, this whole bone divination survived probably until the 1960s in China, where some minorities were still practicing that, and also in Japan and other countries. However, nowadays, I'm not aware that this is still practiced.
Yeah. Professor Joachim Gentz is head of Asian Studies and chair of Chinese Philosophy and Religion at the University of Edinburgh. Joachim, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.